hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. It would be nice to see in the new year with some optimism. Unfortunately, this is not the case. The accumulation and deepening of many problems from last year are still very much with us. So buckle up and brace for impact. Crosstalking 2025, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we cross to Mark Sloboda. He's an international relations and security analyst. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Mark, I'm going to go to you first, and I'm going to kind of vent a little bit here. During 2024, a lot of people we know, in the podcast world, in the alternative media world, the indie world, we're really kind of obsessed with predictions. And, well, there's a lot of egg on a lot of faces to go around here. And so I would really like to avoid on this program to work on predictions because I think it's a useless endeavor, okay? Because most people end up being wrong and they don't always admit to it, unfortunately. So, having said that, I would like to look at developing trends, okay? Now, we've just talked about what happened in 2024. Given that conversation, what happened in 2024, what kind of developing trends from the last year do we see going into this new year? Mark.
Well, I think that, you know, the elephant room in the room is the conflict in Ukraine. I do not believe that the conflict in Ukraine will end in the next year. I think the trend of the acceleration and the escalation of the conflict will continue, despite the new U.S. administration of Donald Trump coming into office in the United States, simply because I do not believe that there is any deal that the U.S. president, whoever that U.S. president is, can offer Russia that Russia will accept. And Russia's terms are unacceptable to any U.S. president. An attempt by the Donald Trump administration to, play a role that, he's going to cut a deal between Russia and Ukraine as if he's some kind of neutral outside arbiter, is just patently false. This is ultimately a conflict between Russia and the United States. On the United States, it is a proxy war, but it is a conflict that the U.S. is losing, and Trump owns that conflict as soon as he comes into office. And whatever he may think of the Kiev regime and Zelensky in person, and whatever, you know, political domestic gripes he has against them justified, he does not want to be known as the president who handed Ukraine over to Vladimir Putin. No U.S. president wants that on that record. So I predict that the war will continue. It will accelerate. It will escalate. And when Putin talks to Donald Trump or his, envoys or whatever, and says, yes, thank you very much, but yet means yet. And then everyone will whisper in Trump's ears, you need to show strength to have peace. You need to escalate in order to de-escalate. And Trump himself has already promised to flood Ukraine with weapons. What weapons? I have no idea, because even he's admitted that the U.S. military industrial complex doesn't have them. But if Putin refuses his grand deal. So I think that the war will get nastier, will get more desperate. We'll continue to see more bombings of civilian buildings, assassinations, the spate of a Kiev regime intelligence arson attacks that are occurring throughout Russia at the moment. We'll see more and more of these, dirty tricks, I like to call them. U.S. military might call them unconventional warfare, because out of desperation and panic, they can't win on the battlefield. That's what they will turn to increasingly.
You know, George, you and I have talked about this a great deal, and it's not between, I like Mark's approach to all of this. I think he's largely right. It's not, a conflict between Ukraine and Russia. It's a proxy war. It's a NATO proxy war against Russia using Ukraine here. And if there's going to be any kind of coming to terms, it's NATO that is going to be coming to terms, not Ukraine. Ukraine is a footnote. It's a sidebar to all of this here. And that's why I've been very frustrated with the commentary that I've called last legism. I think Mark is right. I don't know about the time frame. Nobody really does. But as long as the United States is not losing troops and they can keep printing money, well, you know, the Ukrainians are going to suffer, Russians will suffer, the Europeans will suffer. Well, what's that to an American administration, George?
No, I think I agree with that, Peter. I think that for the United States, for NATO, this has been kind of a good war. They're not losing any lives. It's the Ukrainians and the Russians, I mean, Slavs are losing lives by the tens and hundreds of thousands. So, why not keep it going? The one caveat that I would introduce is that Trump has clearly stated that he's going to end this war. That means he is going to launch a major diplomatic offensive to try to bring this to an end. Initially, at least, I think Russia cannot say no. I think Russia would have to play along, take this seriously. And then, really, the question is, if there is some kind of a deal on offer, which is say, look, all right, we freeze the line of conflict here at this point, we'll put the whole issue of Ukraine in NATO on the back burner. Would that deal be acceptable? Now, I think, you know, obviously, it's a very bad deal for Russia, terrible deal, because Russia then gets nothing out of it. However, there have been times in the past, in the quite recent past, when Russia has seemed willing to accept bad deals. And that, I think, is something that is a matter of concern. I mean, we saw that Minsk was one and two were very bad deals for Russia. And Russia not only signed those deals, but went on for 8 years, you know, continually complaining, well, why aren't you adhering to Minsk? When it was obvious to anyone that, of course, the West wasn't going to adhere to Minsk. Of course, the West was just using Minsk in order to strengthen Ukraine for an eventual offensive. That was clearly on the cards, and I think that's why Russia launched the so-called special, the SMO in February 2022. And then, of course, again, Russia was ready to sign at Istanbul, which again was a bad deal for Russia, but Russia was ready to sign it, and Putin has repeatedly proclaimed, look, here, we were ready to sign, we, you know, our signatures are on the paper. So I don't think there's going to be a deal. And then I think once the Trump initiative kind of comes to a dead end, then I think the Trump administration will escalate, and I think escalate against Russia. But I have concern. I can't rule out wholly that Russia will sign on to something like
okay,
this.
Mark, synthesize everything we've already heard here, because we have three different kind of approaches to it. Go ahead.
Yeah, and don't forget the Austin Awe framework for Syria, which was another bad deal for Russia.
Yep.
That blew back on them catastrophically with Erdogan.
Well, I mean, I'm sorry to interrupt, Mark, because it's you and I had a different conversation in a different venue about this. How is the failure of Astana going to influence Russian thinking in 2025? Go ahead.
Well, first of all, I think that Russia is certainly has reduced influence and power projection capability in the Middle East. I do not believe that Russia will maintain military bases in Syria, even if Erdogan wants them there. That's not going to happen. Russia doesn't want to be under the leverage of Erdogan and Al-Qaeda to maintain their bases there. Apparently, they're already trying to shift resources from those bases to Libya. Mm-hmm. However, that's another risky situation. I think if they do that, Russia will almost certainly get burned again. And ultimately, they will decide that Africa and the Middle East are outside of Russia's geopolitical horizons. And they will do what many Russian critics of of Putin have said over the last decade is that Russia should focus on Ukraine. They should double down on Ukraine, and they should accept no compromises, no bad Minsk again. That is a refrain that you hear in Russian politics, right? No more Istanbuls, no more Ostinov frameworks. Everything has to be settled from a position of strength on the battlefield that there is no wiggle room, there is no coming back from. And if Putin does agree to another bad deal, that will be the end of Putin politically in Russia. I that is something that almost seems unimaginable, right, after the last two decades. But I assure you it is imaginable, especially among the military generals, the political elite in the country, and ordinary Russians, right, that Russians that have sacrificed so much of the opprobrium Russia hatred, the collective punishment of the West, the effects on the economy, the deaths of tens of thousands of Russian soldiers in Ukraine. I don't think that the Russian people will accept anything less than victory. That has been defined by the Russian president and the Kremlin again and again, unwaveringly, since the beginning of the conflict, and has not wavered, has only strengthened since.
George, before we go to the break here, Mark has said a lot there. Is the incoming administration, do they realize what something like what Mark had to say?
I think so. I mean, I think that if they get something like that, if they can get Russia to agree to some deal that they've been hinting at, and it leads to the downfall of Putin, and I agree with Mark, I think that if Russia signs on to that, it will, you know, perhaps not immediately, but it will lead to the end of Putin, the Americans will think, hey, this is a good deal for us. We have done rather well out of it, which is why, again, Russia should stay very, very far from any kind of a deal short of, you know, achieving their goals. And I think ultimately their goal has to be regime change in Kiev, because, any deal whereby, we'll freeze the line of conflict and whatever, you still got a problem.
This was NATO on
your borders.
This was a conversation I had with Mark many, many moons ago, and he said that. There should have been a regime change of the regime change back in 2014. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go into go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the new year, 2025. Stay with RT.
Take a fresh look around at life. Kaleidoscopic, isn't it? A shattered reality distorted by power. Tired vision with no real opinions. Pictures designed to simplify or confuse. Who really wants a better world? And is it just for the chosen few? Fractured images presented as fact. Can you see through their illusions? Going underground can.
Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the new year, 2025. Okay, let's go back to Mark. Mark, at the end of November, beginning of December of last year, we saw an event that no one that I know of predicted, and it was the complete collapse of the state and sovereignty of Syria. Is this the hors d'oeuvre on the menu for the Middle East for 2025? Is this the beginning of something, a developing trend? Because there are so many moving pieces. We have Hezbollah that is still vulnerable. I can't remember the last time Lebanon had a real government. If the Israelis, with American backing, annexed the West Bank, we're going to have a huge refugee problem going into Jordan. Jordan is already packed full of people that are refugees. We have no idea what the Syrian, what used to be called Syria is going to look like. And then we have Iraq is in play, even Iran. So I've kind of set a lot of pieces on the board. Move whatever one you want. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, so the Middle East was in flame already, you know, before this, the events in Syria and the year, you know, what came to a close. And the conflagration of the Middle East will only continue into the next year. I think that Syria is most likely to become both a failed and properly a fractured state. Syria will now be the Humpty Dumpty who fell off the wall, and all the king's horses or all the hegemon's horses and all the hegemon's men will not be able to put Syria back together again. I think it is very likely that the destabilization from Syria will extend at least into Lebanon and Iraq, potentially further abroad. I think we will see increased direct open conflict between Israel and the U.S. on one side and Iran on the other. You know, look for airstrikes on Iran's nuclear facilities, which Israel is now salivating about now that they're so happy that all of Syria's air defense has disappeared overnight, and Netanyahu has been openly talking about it. I think we will also see the Palestinian problem come to an end with the complete ethnic cleansing over the next 4 years of the Palestinian people from the territory of a greater Israel. We just saw headlines in the Western media over the last week talking about, well, you know, Israel has taken part of Syria, but, you know, Israel's borders have fluctuated throughout history, right? I mean, it's the way they have moved. So Israel's borders are on the move, and the Palestinians will become what the Jewish people once were, a nomadic people without a home. It will not just be Gaza. I think it will be brought into the West Bank as well. And for a finale, we're going to see economic turmoil throughout the world as Trump begins his much talked about tariff war, or renewal of the tariff war, not only on American adversaries, but on American allies as well. So buckle up everywhere for economic turmoil.
George, I mean, Mark has said a lot there. I mean, it's really interesting when we look at what's going on in what's called the Greater Middle East, West Asia, choose your moniker. But, I mean, there's some very interesting conflicts being played out. And I'm not looking at states, okay? States in this region are very, very weak for the most part. You could even make that case about Israel and its internal politics, but nonetheless here. You have neo-Ottomanism, you have American hegemony, and Israeli Zionism. I mean, that's a very interesting parlay in a small geographical space. Go ahead, George.
Oh, it is indeed, but what has turned out in 2023 and 2024, and what Israel has demonstrated, hey, we can do all of this, and we can get away with it, and basically, it's Israel's adversaries that have taken the hit. And contrary to all of the predictions that somehow Israel's in terrible trouble and that the axis of resistance is going to crush Israel, no, it's gone the other way. So what does that mean with the incoming very Zionist administration with Trump? Is that this is the opportunity that they've been looking for. This is the American Zionist lobby and, of course, Israel to reorganize the Middle East, whereby Israel, once and for all, this is the first time in its history, once and for all, can dispense with all of its enemies. And clearly, Syria was a very big deal for Israel. Not only was it, you know, the long-standing ally, first of the Soviet Union, it was always the one unquestioned ally of the Soviet Union, and then of Russia. That's gone, and so now, you know, the it's in Iran that's in the crosshairs. And what are they going to do? Without any question at all, Trump is going to launch this his maximum pressure campaign 2.0, and you will find all kinds of separatist movements emerging in Iran. You know, Baluchis, Azeris, Arabs, Turks, Kurds, and all of which will, of course, be sponsored by the United States. And then in Tehran, we'll find all sorts of sudden liberal movements emerging. You know, women will be demonstrating, taking off their hijabs. And, you know, the America will be, yeah, this is democracy is thriving. And then, of course, given this sort of the chaos that's going to emerge in Syria, ISIS is everywhere. You know, somehow, you know, we have to deal with ISIS, and the Americans are going to say there's a real ISIS problem.
Suddenly they came back. Suddenly they came back.
We have to deal with it, and that's what the moment when they're going to start bombing Iran directly, saying, just as they bombed Syria directly, saying we've got to deal with ISIS. So it's not regime change. Heaven forbid, we're not doing regime change. We're just bombing ISIS.
So,
and then once you've allowed that, you know, you just can start bombing Iran. Then, of course, you just continue escalating.
Yeah, I'm trying to. I'm really confused the difference between ISIS and Al Qaeda. Okay, maybe a topic for another program. Mark, go ahead, jump in.
Yeah, the current de facto ruler of Syria in Damascus, al-Julani, he was the leader of ISIS in Syria, right? The deputy of ISIS, the leader in Syria. And he then became the leader of Jabhat al-Nusra, rebranded as Hayat Tahrir al-Sham. So what is the distinction? I don't think there is one as well. So ISIS is most definitely back because they just overthrew, you know, whether you want to call it ISIS or Al-Qaeda, but the Salafists, you know, they just overthrew the government in Syria. That is, you know, not something that is, it will have repercussions. It will have blowback. And I think that if the U.S. and Israel go about another 2.0 George W. Bush attempt to remake the Middle East, that inevitably it will fail. They will topple some enemies, and eminently they will create new enemies and new geopolitical problems that they will saddle themselves like, just as they did with the explosive influence of Iran in the region after the overthrow of Saddam Hussein. Unintended consequences.
Yeah, this time it'll be different. They always tell us that. Okay, this time it'll be different. George, we're rapidly running out of time, but, you know, China is always on the menu here. How is it going to play out in 2025? We've already heard about the tariffs that the Trump administration is going to pursue. What is it? A Navy general said 2027, 2028, the conflict with China. Well, it's 2025. Go ahead.
Well, I think that, again, China will be definitely a preoccupation of the Trump administration. That will be kind of an interesting, because it's obviously going to be an economic conflict. I mean, I don't think it's going to be about Taiwan. Trump has shown no particular interest in the whole Taiwan issue. And in fact, unlike Biden, he refused to make any commitment to coming to Taiwan's assistance in the event of an invasion. No, I think it's going to be, he's going to wage a serious economic war against China. And particularly, he's going to wage a war against China throughout the world. You know, he's going to crack down on countries that are doing deals with China. You know, some of this, he's going to start blackmailing, extorting countries that have signed on to China's
including friends and allies.
Exactly. You know, you sign on to this with China, you know, you're going to, you know, China's going to build a port for you or a railway for you. You're going to feel the wrath of the United States. And I think that's how he's going to wage this war against China.
Mark, last pontificating words without giving a prediction. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't think we should completely write off military conflict with China. As the tariff war will escalate, the economic war, tensions will grow on the ground. And Trump has brought people in. Notice the Deputy Secretary of State, Elbridge Colby, is one of the most flaming, warmongering China hawks imaginable. And Trump may not care about the Taiwan Straits, but the Taiwan Straits care about, you know, him. Right. They care about, you know, the United States, and the South China Sea might be an even bigger flashpoint than the Taiwan Straits, although intrinsically they are linked together. So, I mean, again, there's only three types of U.S. Foreign policy and political elite. They all want war with Russia, China, Iran. They just prioritize which of those three wars they want more.
Well, I mean, and in 2025, which one is on the top of the totem pole?
I would have to say Iran, but China comes close behind, and Russia hasn't gone away.
George, what's your ranking?
I think it's still Russia, then Iran, then China.
Okay, we still got 30 seconds. Go ahead, George.
Well, I think it's still because Russian war is the ongoing one, and therefore because I think this is going to be the subject of at least for the first 6 months, maybe even a year of the Trump administration of trying to deal with this Ukraine issue. That's, I think, is going to be very dangerous because I think it probably will fail. And if his initiative fails, then I think Trump will escalate. And Trump likes to take risks, you know, that he sees himself as a risk taker. And that's when it could get very,
okay,
very dangerous.
Okay. I hope everybody had a good New Year, because according to my esteemed guests here, it's going to be a pretty gloomy and dreary 2025. Anyway, I want to thank my guests in Budapest and here in Moscow. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, Crosstalk Rules.